Mitzvah Kuf Mem Dalet, the 144th mitzvah, is the mitzvah Shelo Lechol Pigul, not to eat pigul, whatever that is, and hopefully we can rely on the chinuch to explain what the definition of pigul is. Shelo Lechol HaPigul, a pigul who, oh good, first sentence he's going to tell us exactly what it is. Korban Shechoshev Alav HaKoen HaMakriv, Machsheves Psul B'Sha Zvicha O HaKrava. So while the Kohen was performing part of the service that is required to offer this korban, he thought during the service, while he was either slaughtering it or collecting the blood or taking the blood to the altar or sprinkling the blood on the altar, which are the four main services of each korban, at least of an animal, obviously. So he thought something wrong while he was doing it. What does that mean? Upsul ha-machshavahu, kigon shehiskim bedaito, bezeh ha-zbeis ha-zvicha o beis ha-hakrava, that he decided while he was slaughtering or while he was offering the blood, she yochal meoso korban achar zman hamugbal achiloso, that he was gonna, this korban was gonna be eaten after the time that it's supposed to be eaten. So whatever this particular korban is, if the kohen thought that this was gonna be eaten at an improper time, then that creates pigul from this korban. O yakter mimenu mashaton haktora achar zman hamugbal haktora, he's going to offer up the innards that have to be offered on the altar, something or that's at the wrong time. Sheachilas mizbeach v'achilas adam hakol nishma b'lashon achila. So it doesn't matter whether he thinks that a person is going to eat the humanly edible parts of this offering at an improper time, or that the altar is going to quote unquote eat its portion at an improper time. In either case, that is called pigul. That's bad. And you were not, as a separate mitzvah, obviously, not to eat it. And the Kohen did a sin that he's...
Who was going to eat it? The Kohen himself?
Well, there are different types of offerings. Some offerings are eaten by the Kohanim. Some offerings, like the Shlamim, are eaten by the owners. And some are, yeah. No, he thinks that it's going to be eaten at a certain time. Let's say the owner told him...
No.
So let's say the owners told him, oh, by the way, you know this three-day rule... That doesn't really appeal to us. You know, we're going to put it in the freezer and we're going to eat it. We're going to eat it later than the pro of time. And the Kohen says, oh, I guess that they're prerogative. He's a very liberal Kohen. So he says, while he's slaughtering the offering or sprinkling his blood, he thinks, this korban is not going to be eaten in the proper time frame. It's going to be eaten outside the time frame. That would be pigul, yeah. Or if the Kohen himself could eat it, so of course he could create pigul. But this pigul, of course, only goes according to the thoughts of the person, of the Kohen who's offering it, does not go according to the thoughts of the owners. If the owners think, ha, we're going to eat this after the improper time, the Kohen has no idea. The Kohen offers it up assuming that it's going to be eaten in the proper time. That's not pigul. Once it passes the time, then it would become an invalid offering, but that's not pigul. That's not the separate category of pigul. Right. In other words, the offering, if such a thing that the owners thought that they were going to eat the offering at an improper time, and the Kohen had no idea, the Kohen just offered it up normally, then the Kohen, then the offering does provide the atonement for the owners of the offering. Yes,
even if he
that's correct.
Until right. They do the next thing.
No, because the eating of the offering is not what causes, the eating of the offering is a separate mitzvah. The eating offering does not cause the atonement. What causes the atonement is the sprinkling of the blood on the altar, which is performed by the Kohen. So it's also interesting over here that it's one of the few cases in halacha where thoughts matter. That the Kohen just thinks, oh, I'm going to do it at an improper time, or that it's going to be at an improper time, and that invalidates the korban. So because it's such an anomalous opinion, although clearly the Sefer HaChinuch, as it's going to become clear here and way later as well as the Rambam, hold that pigul is indeed just by the Kohen thinking in his head that it's going to be done at the improper time, there is a shita amongst, especially the Ashkenazi Rishon, it was pointed out by the Mishnah Lamelech, one of the commentaries on the Rambam at the beginning, of the 13th perek of Hilchos Psulei Hamukdashin, the halachos of invalid korbanos. So Mishnah Melech quotes over there many opinions that you actually have to say. The Kohen must actually speak. I have the intention that this is going to be at an improper time. And that's Rashi, he quotes Rashi, he quotes Tosfos. He says over there that the Yireim, who's a student of Rabbeinu Tam, who's another Ashkenazi, very famous Ashkenazi Rishon, he says explicitly that he, like the Rambam, that it's even thought is a problem. So the Mishnah Melech sort of takes him to task over there. He says, what do you mean, all your teachers, your Ashkenazi teacher said that it has to be spoken, and you all of a sudden are writing like that, like the Sephardi Rishonim? Okay, so that's an anomalous opinion. But in any case, if we paskin like Rashi and Tosfos, That would be better for OCD Kohanim, right? Because one of the symptoms of OCD is that thoughts you can't control, you know, you are very concerned by thoughts that pop into your head. So if the Kohen might think, although it only applies, obviously, if you have OCD thoughts, if the Kohen has OCD thoughts that pop into your head, into his head, that's saying, haha, this is going to be eaten after the improper time. He's like, no, not really. I'm not really planning to eat it at the improper time. Obviously, it doesn't count. It has to be that the Kohen's really planning on thinking that he's going to eat it at the at an improper time. But still, it would be better for OCD Kohanim if we actually paskin like the Ashkenazi Rishonim that it actually has to be spoken out, and thinking in your head is not sufficient. Yeah, that is correct. And there's a parallel machlokas into a more practical case, which is we have many halachos that something has to be done lishma. Something has to be done for its own intention. So, for example, a get has to be written lishma, has to be written with the intention that it's for this man and this woman and for the purpose of divorce. Tzitzis have to be made lishma, they have to be spun, the threads have to be spun with the express intent that it has to be, that it's for the purpose of tzitzis.
Klaf, the sheep has to be raised
No, actually, the sheep doesn't have to be raised that way, although there was Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, the famous head of the Musar movement, was known to be, first of all, there is a chumrah. Technically, though speaking, the only thing that halachically needs to be done lishma for tzitzis is starting with the spinning of the threads from the raw wool. And certainly the making of the tzitzis itself and the tying them onto the garments has to be lishma. But the process of lishma only begins with the spinning of the threads. So there is a chumrah that's already brought in the Rishonim, that some Rishonim, and the Rama says to be machmer like this ideally, that to even the combing of the wool, the raw wool, to get rid of the garbage in there should be done lishma. It's a chumrah. It's a chumrah only, and not it's questionable whether anybody ever held that it was that's actually halachically required. But we assume that's a chumrah. But the Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, the head, the originator of the Musar movement, was known to even be makbid that his tzitzis should be shorn off the sheep lishma.
But nobody went as far as to say you have to raise the sheep.
No, because that has nothing to do with the wool. For sure, it doesn't make any sense if it's before the stage where the sheep is producing wool. That's not. But that's I see it. See how crazy the world is getting. That there are people, there are companies now, apparently, I saw an advertisement that's offering giza lishma, that the sheep is shorn for the purpose of tzitzis, because based on this chumrah of Rav Yisrael Salanter. Okay, that's if you're really such a huge tzaddik, so you would arrange to have it done privately yourself, but to have it commercialized is very problematic. I'm sure Rabbi Yisrael Salanter didn't say, "Ha, I'm going now to shear my sheep for a tzitzis." He did it privately, quietly. That's a problem. That's a major problem nowadays.
One thing, we're another.
Right, so, but there are tzitzis that are offered that are niputz lishma, that the wool is combed to get rid of the garbage lishma. That's already a chumrah that's found in the Shulchan Aruch. The Rama quotes on the Shulchan Aruch, so people want to be machmir for that. It's a little bit more reasonable, although you have to, again, decide if that's something you want to do, something that's appropriate for you. In any case, okay, so that's the lishma by tzitzis, and of course, tefillin also, the klaf has to be made lishma for a sefer Torah as well, and has to be written lishma. So the question is, what is lishma? Does it mean that you're simply thinking, or you have the intention of using this parchment that you're now tanning lishem for the purpose of sefer Torah or tefillin, or does you actually have to say as you're beginning to make it, I am now putting the hides into the tanning solution lishem sefer Torah, that I want to use these for sefer Torah? Does it work? In other words, does the machshava work at all? So that also is subject to a machlokas rishon, and we assume that, again, the Rambam, who holds that is that thoughts are certainly sufficient for pigul also, so he would that there's no indication in the Rambam that he would assume that you need to say it out loud also. But the Sefer HaTrumah, again, we have the Ashkenazi school, the Ashkenazi rishon says that, you know, how do you know? It's again, people have thoughts all the time. In order to make it more explicit and make the Kedusha certainly relevant for this thing that you're making right now, so you should say it out loud that I am Harini Kosev L'Shem Kedushas Tefillin. The sofer, when he begins to write, should say, I am now beginning to write for the purpose of for writing Tefillin. And we are generally the stringent for that, that you have to say it. Only at the beginning.
At the beginning of writing the Sefer Torah.
Certainly. The Rishonim bring
down. Sits down to write.
There are people, again, there are people who, just to make sure, whatever, every time they sit down to write, they say, I'm writing L'Shem Kedushas Sefer Torah. But all the poskim say that certainly The only thing that would be halachically required is at the beginning. So at the beginning of the process of the whole Sefer Torah, you write out L'shem Kiddush Sefer Torah, so everything else goes after the beginning. So it's shayach to the, it's just a continuation of the original action. So too, when you're tanning the hides for tefillin, so there are a lot of steps in the process. So technically speaking, you only have to do it at the beginning. But people are generally, again, chumras, more chumras that people, when they begin working for that day, they'll say L'shem Kiddush Sefer Torah again. Yes, matzah also. Right, matzah also, yeah. Right, that's, again, that's a question whether that really has to be spoken out loud, but we'd machmer for that, yeah. So for matzah, again, you technically, just when you begin, I guess it has to be that batch of dough. Then you have, they say, L'shem matzah's mitzvah. People, again, just to keep them, to help them keep it in mind the whole time. They're afraid that, again, there's no idea, really, technically, of hesech hadas, that you have to have your mind thinking L'shem matzah's mitzvah all the time, but
they just done in time.
Right, and just in terms of reminding themselves, people say L'shem Matzah's Mitzvah more. But again, the whole thing of that you have to speak it out loud is also more of a chumrah, although we do certainly try to accommodate that opinion. It's a difference of opinion whether b'dievet in different cases, ex post facto, if you didn't actually speak it out and you just thought it, whether we would rely on that b'dievet is different in different cases. Also, it should be pointed out over here that since Shechita, that since the slaughtering is one of the activities that during which you could have these thoughts of pigul, then slaughtering does not have to be done by a kohen. Only the reception of the blood and taking the blood to the altar and sprinkling it on the altar must be done by a kohen. I mean, usually kohanim were the ones to slaughter the sacrifices because they were trained and they were hanging out in the Beis HaMikdash. But technically speaking, the slaughtering of a sacrifice can be done by anyone. So therefore, if that person... That's the only time when a non-Kohen could do pigul, because if the person slaughtering has in mind that they're going to eat the offering at an improper time, or that the offering is going to be eaten at an improper time, then that would also constitute pigul, even though that person is not a Kohen. Uber HaKosov, the Torah says, Sha'ochel mimenu shi'isa avon. The pasuk tells us that what's going to happen when you eat pigul, the sacrifice that has been slaughtered or any one of its avodas performed with an improper intent. You're going to bear your iniquity. Shenemar, v'hi me achol yachel ve'anefesh achel es mimenu avonos tisa unesius ha'avon bechan hu kares. So what does it mean? You shall bear your iniquity. It means that you're subject to the penalty of kares. That's really bad. Spiritual excision. Kemosha nilmad ba gemara b'gzera shava. The Talmud tells us that since in another place, I think Nosar, where it says explicitly avonatisa v'nichresah hanefesh hime ameh, that this soul should bear its iniquity and should be cut off from its people. So since it uses the same turn of phrase avonatisa by nosa by pigul also, so we learn out that you get kares for pigul as well. Yeah. V'ulam as harasa kolomar halav ha'meforish al zeh. So here we said we're only talking about the person who eats it. We're not talking about the kohen who did it. So how do you know that it's usher to do it? I think it's seemingly obvious, but there has to be some sort of indication in the Torah itself that it's really a problem to do it in the first place.
You're thinking
right. Kolomar halav ha'meforish al zeh milvat honesh nizkar b'chan, that the explicit prohibition besides the penalty here. Humashe kasu b'miluim, when it talks about dedicating the mishkan, lo ye achel ki kodesh hu. It should not be eaten because it's holy. So how does that? What does that mean? What does that mean? The Amar Zichronim Livracha Shoso Akosuv Kolol Bazhara Kol Masha Nifsad Min Hakodshim Ein Roy Lochlo Kemo Hanosar BeHapigul. So anything that causes problems for a korban should not be eaten. B'chmochin Amar Zichronim Livracha Shenichlu Bazhara Slo Sochal Kol Toeva Shadarshu Kol Shetiavti Lacharehu Beval Tochal. That since the pasuk says, do not eat any abomination, so the Chazal say over that any abominable thing, anything that I've told you not to eat, the only thing that I've said is usher to you, is forbidden to you, so it should not be eaten. So it says, since you have an extra pasuk over there that you know already that it shouldn't be eaten, so since you have basically two psukim, that basically you could learn out the prohibition of pigul, of something that's something that causes anyway, and you're not supposed to cause any problems vis-a-vis the halachos of korbanos. So since you have one pasuk that says that, and one pasuk that says over here explicitly that you shouldn't eat pigul, So since you have two verses saying approximately the same thing, so one must be talking about the person, the prohibition for the person who's causing the pigul, and one is talking about the person who's eating the pigul.
Oh.
Anyway, so the Sefer HaChinuch is now going to discuss the fact that if you read the pasuk, which I'm sure everybody did while they were staying up late last night to learn the Sefer HaChinuch, what we're going to learn today. So the pasuk tells us, the pasuk says, "Im he'achol ye'achel bayom hashlishi pigulhu," that if it shall be eaten on the third day, it is pigul. So how does that correspond to what we just said? Pigul is seemingly it just means that what it means is that if it is left to the third day, then lo ye'ratzeh, then it shall not be a korban. In other words, the owners of the korban will not receive atonement for it. But what I just told you, not like that. I just told you that once the blood is sprinkled on the altar, then the korban, the owners have the atonement. So how could, in other words, the entire discussion of Sefer HaChinuch now seems to be going completely against the simple meaning of the pasuk, which is not talking about thoughts during the time that the korban is being performed. It's simply the meaning of the pasuk is that if you leave it to be nosar, if you leave it to be left over past the proper time, so it's not a good korban. So, v'zesha amar im he'achol ye'achel bayom ha'shlishi, kilomar she'choshav alav lo'achlo bayom ha'shlishi. So what does it mean? That you thought about eating it on the third day. She'kein darshu zichronim levracha, v'zeh ha'pasuk im he'achol ye'achel pigu ye'ah. So the chachamim have a drasha on this pasuk, so what does the chinuch tell you about this drasha? Kof oznecha lishmoa. Force your ear to listen, because it's difficult. I mean, it really doesn't sound like the simple meaning of the verse at all. But we have a received tradition that this is what it means. This is what the sages interpret it to mean. So the received tradition of Chazal is that it's talking about again what we said, that you're thinking about leaving it to an improper time while you're performing the offering. Shehu nifsad bezos ha-machshava, that causes the korban to become no good. Ve'ha'ochlo chayev kores, if you eat it, you're chayev kores, shenemar bo v'ha'nefesh ha'ocheles v'menu avonot yisa. Again, we have, it says that if you eat pigul, then you shall bear your iniquity. Ve'nemar benosar ve'ochla v'avono yisa, ki eskodesh Hashem chilel v'nichrosa. Like, yeah, right, so by nosar, it says that you're chayev kores. And it says again the turn of phrase, avono yisa, that you shall bear your iniquity. So since it says karis explicitly over there, so since a lot of times we have a principle called gezera shava, that you darshan the Torah, by if it uses a certain turn of phrase in one place and makes it more explicit, and it uses the same turn of phrase in a different place and it's not as explicit, so you derive the laws from the place that's more explicit to the place that's less explicit. By gamrin la bekrisos begzera shava, maseches krisos, we said, yeah, it's a gezera shava, shamru, Sham al ye gzera shava kala beinecha. So it's telling you, don't treat gzera shavas lightly. They're very important. Why? Sherei pigul echad migufei Torah velo lamdu akasuv ela b'gzera shava. So pigul is one of the most important mitzvahs of the Torah. I mean, it's one, not to us nowadays, which doesn't have that much significance, but it's in terms of the world of korbanos, it's extremely significant because it's a very easy thing to mess up, relatively speaking. And yet, it causes somebody who eats it to become chayiv kares. The yoli vavon avon minosar ma'lahalan kares afkan kares. So it derives the prohibition that the punishment of kares from over there by nosar and brings it to pigul over here. Mishorshe mitzvah zo. What's the reasoning behind this mitzvah? Hayisod asher baninu tchila she'amarnu ki inyani akorban lahechsher machshavos b'nei ish otzar b'nafsha mitoch habula shebein yadam. So the point, the whole point of korbanos is to correct your method of thinking, so that people who are doing a certain action should think about how bad sin is and how great upright performance of the commandments is. And bein yadam is interesting. I just noticed this actually, that pula shebein yadam, it could be a borrowing from the Arabic. That in Arabic, the way you say in front of, there's no word for in front of in Hebrew or Arabic, technically. In Hebrew, it's lifnei. Right, but lifnei is really means to the in the face of. So in Arabic, the similar in the there's no direct preposition that means in front of. So in front of in English either. In front of. It's a circumlocution, ishtigal. So in Arabic, the way you say it is baina yadaihi, that between his hands. So instead of in front of his hands, so between his hands, so you're in front of him. So here, bain yadam, could mean that the action that's in front of you right now. Again, they didn't speak Arabic in Spain at the time of the Sefer Chinuch. They spoke Spanish because the Christians had reconquered it, but it could be that there was still some Arabic influence somehow. Al kein miyos ikar sibaso al dvar hamachshavos hayaroyli pasul b'machshava netuya bo min hayosher b'chol masav. So, any thought that's really bad when it comes to the korbanos should be subject to some sort of penalty, because the whole importance of the korbanos over here is thinking about them and having it have the proper effect on the way you think. He thinks that he, pats himself on the back, that sometimes he says when his shorshei ha-mitzvah, his reasonings behind the mitzvah, sometimes he says, that's the best I got, take it or leave it. But here he says, I think this is really good. Midine ha-mitzvah, Balachos Mashamra Zikarnam Livracha, Shainchi of Kares, Ela La Ochel Mina Korba Mina Chelek Shiyeshwa La Adam Ola Mizbeach Menu. That the only Chiyuv Kares on Pigul per se is the part that people or the altar would ordinarily be able to eat. I mean, the altar doesn't eat, it consumes, but we said that it's called eating. So from the part that's ordinarily edible to someone, whether it's the altar or to people. That, but for the part of the offering itself that causes the other parts of the offering to become permissible, that not. But he's going to give an example. You're not allowed to eat blood anyway. It's a chiyuv karis, the blood anyway. That you don't receive the blood is not subject to the prohibition of pigul per se. Again, we'll have to discuss in terms of the blood, the punishment for eating blood per se. So, for example, the blood is not the part that's burned on the altar. The blood is not the part of the korban that is eaten by the kohanim or by the owners. It's the part of the korban that's sprinkled on the altar in order to cause the korban to provide atonement, and at that point it becomes permissible to offer the parts that are on the altar that are supposed to be on the altar, and give to the parts to be eaten the parts that are supposed to be eaten. The blood is never eaten by someone or by the altar itself, just sprinkled on the side. Sha'achar zrikas adam ha'imurim mutarim likarei v'lo kodim l'chein. So it's after the sprinkling of the blood that the innards can be offered on the altar. Mikol makom afal pi she'ein bo kares lokin al, you still receive the penalty of lashes for this blood.
For eating blood.
But blood ordinarily has the prohibition of a kares, so I'm just trying to think if it's an issue of anus or chalal isser or something like that. What does he say over here? Does not... We should note that one who consumes any blood violates the general prohibition against eating blood. While that prohibition in certain cases also bears the penalty of kares, there's a practical ramification of having violated two kares bearing prohibitions instead of one. So in terms of bringing the number of chatases, in other words, if you do it accidentally, so you would only have to bring one chatas instead of for eating the blood, rather than a second chatas. Rather than two chatases for eating... whatever, there are lots of different klalim, there are different rules in the Talmudic literature about when you can violate two prohibitions for doing one action. It's called anus or chalalis, or when one prohibition is joined onto an existing prohibition or not. In any case, don't eat this blood, but it's not pigul. Vechad hamate risho, aval ochel kezayis min besara korban o afilu min haimurin chayev karis mishum pigul. But if you eat it, if you eat the flesh of the korban, or from the innards that are burned on the altar, then you would be chayev kares for eating pigul. Why? Because you might say, wait a minute, but the innards are also a mater, because they cause the... Once the innards are burned, then you can eat the rest of the flesh of the korban that's supposed to be eaten. So you think you might only be chayav for pigul on the flesh itself. So no. She'adam hu'amater ha'imurin la'mizbeach. It only goes according to the first matter. The dam, the blood that's sprinkled on the side, is the first action that permits the other things of the korban to take place, including the burning of the entrails on the altar and then the eating of the flesh. So in that case, even the entrails, even though they are only eaten by the altar and not people, and they permit the flesh of the offering to be eaten, even so, that you not be chayav for pigul on eating you would be chayav pigul for eating the entrails because they already had the matter of the blood. Right. I'm saying they're supposed to be burnt completely on the altar, but I'm saying if you decide to make kishka out of part of these entrails and you eat it yourself, then you would. And you're not supposed to eat that. We'd have to discuss what other penalty you are going to get, but you don't get kares for pigul. Lefika chayev ha'ochel min ha'imurin, afalpi she'ein gamken matirin ha'basar la'adam ein b'chach klum, she'achar ha'adam shu matirishon ha'ochem kemo shemarnu. Again, basically what I just said, that you only go according to the first original action of the korban, which is the sprinkling of the blood that permits everything else to be done. And even though there could be sub-steps in there that permit other steps to be done, it only goes according to the first permitting item. V'chein mincha shenispagla. So it's possible to have pigul by a meal offering as well, but until now we've only been discussing blood and flesh, and which only apply obviously to animal offerings. Aval ha'ochel kezayis min ha'kometz shelo min ha'levona shehein ha'matirin ein chayav in alav karis. So let's say the meal offering has analogous processes to the animal offering. In other words, you have to take the kometz, the thing that the Kohen scoops up with his hand, and the lavona he puts on the frankincense and he burns that on the altar, and that permits the rest of the meal offering to be eaten to the people that it's supposed to be eaten to. So in that case, if you eat if the Kohen did the kometz, he scooped the scooping portion, and burned it on the altar with the intention that the meal offering should be eaten at an improper time, that would be pigul. So you wouldn't be chayav for eating the kometz itself, the scooped portion, because that's the matir. That's what permits the rest of the korban to be eaten. It's only pigul. Again, you're only chayav for pigul if you eat a portion that's normally eaten. That's normally supposed to be eaten
at the wrong time.
But you eat it if it was thought to be eaten at the improper time. Yeah. If you eat at the actually at the improper time, then that's nosar. That's a different story. I mean, similar, but not what we're discussing right now. Ein chayav in alkaris mikol malkam lo kalein kemosh amarnu. But again, you would receive the penalty of lashes, just like you would for eating the blood. That's the mater for the animal offerings. Ve'elu ein advarim shein chayav in aleiha mishum pigul la'olam. What are you never chayav pigul for? Hakometz, v'alavona, v'adam, kemosha amarnu, the scooped portion and the frankincense and the blood, as we said, v'ayayin, the libations that were performed with the offerings, v'amenachos hanisrafos kulan shereen bayin kometz latira. And remember, certain menachos that belong to whom? That belong to the male kohanim are never eaten. No portion of it is eaten. They're simply burned entirely on the altar, so there is no portion that's normally eaten. So therefore, there's no pigul relevant to these types of meal offerings because they're burnt completely on the altar. There's no portion that's ordinarily eaten, and therefore no mater, no portion that's separated from them to cause it to become permissible. V'chol she'ein matirin chutz mimenu ein chayavin mishum pigul alav. That anything that doesn't have a separate thing that permits it to be eaten would not be subject to the prohibition of pigul. I mean, karis, anyway. Velog shemen shel mitzora, part of the purification ritual of the leper, what we call the leper, but somebody who's afflicted with tzaras, gamken in chayav in olav, so part he has to bring a log, 300 milliliters of olive oil as part of his purification process. And some of it is sprinkled at the base of mikdash, and some of it is put on his body. Vim tomar velo dam ha'asha matiro, so maybe you should be chayav pigul for that, maybe it should be subject to pigul. Because the blood, again, the mitzora also has to bring an asham. So the asham does have blood that permits it to be eaten. So the blood of the asham allows him to bring this oil later on. So you think that maybe, so therefore the oil should be subject to pigul. Hachuba is not true. She'eno talui bo sherei adam mevi ashamu hayom velog achar kama yamim. So it's two separate, even though technically, yes, he has to bring this log of olive oil after the blood of his asham is sprinkled on the altar. Even so, it's not relevant to pigul because it's not closely connected enough. In other words, the korban, you sprinkle the blood, then you eat the thing right away. It's clearly one unit. But here, you sprinkle it, and then a little later, when you feel like it, you can bring the olive oil. So part of this mitzvah is that somebody who does pigul, the kohen, or if you're not a kohen and you're slaughtering an offering, and you think an improper thought of eating it outside the proper time, then you violate a negative commandment. You're not chayav karis, but you violate a negative commandment. Shenemar lo yechoshev lo. So included in that is, again, also what we said before when we were talking about deriving a lav for this explicit prohibition, that the Kohen should definitely not do pigul ideally. That's certainly not a discussion. And it's not one of the 365 negative commandments officially in the count.
The
prohibition to have the thought. It's just another detail like of pigul. It's not it's not independent enough to have its own commandment. Soon coming up, we'll have parsha of Emor. Kol mum lo yebo, that no mum, there should be no bad thing, any psul, any problem with any of the karbanos. Sedarshu zichronim levracha mishum. Misham lav lamatel mumbakotchim, that you should not cause any sacrifices to become blemished. So, for example, this would even apply if you're raising an animal to become an offering for yourself. So you're not allowed to whack it and make it or cut its ear or something like that. That would cause it to become a mum and not be able to be a korban. You have the korbanos; it's your job to make sure the korbanos have to stay in their pristine state. In mitzvah Resh Pei Zayin, 287. So that is over about 143 mitzvos to go. V'zeh ha'inyan gam kein shel mechashe psul kein hamatel mum hu nechshav. So if you have an improper thought and you cause the korban to become invalidated, that's similar to causing a blemish in a korban. Since it's so simple, it's so relevant to this mitzvah not to eat pigul, and relevant to the mitzvah not to cause any blemishes in the korbanos, so it doesn't merit its own mitzvah. The kohen who does it does not get the penalty of lashes, because there's no action associated with pigul; it is simply thinking an improper thought, or according to the Rishonim who hold that it has to be spoken, still speech is not a maisa for the purpose of receiving lashes, it has to be an actual physical action. So there are certain other types of thoughts that will invalidate the korban but not create pigul. Thinking it's a different korban from what it really is. And thinking that it's going to be eaten in an improper place. So, for example, the kodshe kodshim, the really holy offerings, have to be eaten within the temple precincts. And the lesser holy offerings, the shlamim, can be eaten anywhere in Yerushalayim. So if you think you slaughter a shlamim and you think, I'm going to go eat the shlamim in Tel Aviv, then that would be a machsheves, or the Kohen thinks that he's going to eat, the owner is going to eat the shlamim in Tel Aviv. So that would be an example of machsheves makom. That's what we've been talking about so far, eating it in an improper time. So those other types of thinking that eating it in a wrong place, for example, would render it invalid but not create pigul, that you'd be chayav kares. So eze korban of eze avoda, again, which korban, which avoda, kiyon shchita, zrika, kabbalah, halacha, again, during the four main avodos of shchita, of slaughtering, of sprinkling the blood on the altar, receiving the blood, and bringing it to the altar. It's very cute. Those are called the four avodos. The chol prate dine hapigul v'gam nosar hadomelo. And all the din, all the halachos of the of this pigul that we were talking about, and similarly, in a very similar prohibition of actually eating at an improper time. And as we've said, zvachim and menachos and krisos and all these different places, it's explained. It applies in the time of the Beis Hamikdash for males and females, afilu Yisraelim, even regular Jews, of course, because Jews can eat certain sacrifices. Derech klal asaratu Torah lakol bein kohen bein Yisrael. What? Ve'over aleha ve'achal kezayis v'menu b'mezid chayev kares. Again, if on purpose, you're chayev kares. B'shogeg mevi chatas kvua. The normal dichotomy we have over here between on purpose and not on purpose, that if it's on purpose kares, then accidentally, then it is a chatas. Uchvar perashnu pa'mayim. We explained twice. Shekorban sheno ola v'yorei lefianios v'osher nikra kavua. The reason it's called a chatas kvua, as we explained already, is because it doesn't, the price doesn't fluctuate based on how much you can afford. It's always set. Mitzvah, it's only for very specific instances that you can bring out type of chatas that the price fluctuates. Mitzvah kuf mem hei, 145. Shelo lechol b'sar kodshim shenitma. Not to eat any of the sacrificial meat that has become ritually defiled. Shelo lechol b'sar hakodshim shenitma. Not to eat the flesh of the offering that has become ritually impurified. Shenemar v'abasar asher yigah b'chol tamei lo ye'achel. The flesh that touches anything impure shall not be eaten. V'hu adin adam tamei sh'asar lechol b'sar basar tar. Certainly, if the person himself, even if the item is currently tahar, it's ritually pure, and the person who's eating it is ritually impure, then that's also a problem. Kimo shenichto b'lab b'fnei atzmo. That we will learn in mitzvah kuf samech zayin 176 for 41 mitzvahs from now. I mean, no, 21 mitzvahs from now. Okay. Bezras Hashem. Uperek sheni dipsachim amru tumas aguf bekaris tumas basar balav. That if you eat it while you're impure, then you get the penalty of karis. But if the meat is impure and you're pure, then you get the penalty of simply alav and you get malchus. Mishurshe mitzvah zo, what's the reasoning behind it? Mashikosabnu lamalash and stavinu lahagdil in yoni hakorban b'chol inyan, that everything has to be amazing and wonderful when it comes to korbanos. Ubevadai mima'aloso shelo lochlo kim betaro v'guf noki. You're not supposed to eat, it's not appropriate for sacrificial meats to eat it when you're impure. Just the pasnish, you know what I mean? Ubedavar hagdiloso matuelas lanubo kvar kosavnu taima. Why should it become... Why should it be so important that we make the put the korbanos on a pedestal? That we discussed already, that it affects our thoughts and to get bring us closer to God when we have more of an awe of it. Midinei hamitzvah, the halachos kigon ma'ashamr zichronim levracha she'asur letamei hakodshim olasabev lahem tuma. It is impermissible to cause any type of sacrificial meat to become tamei, to become ritually impure. Aval hametaman ein oloke. You don't receive lashes for that because it's ein b'maisa. It's a metaphysical maisa. It's not a physical maisa. You only chayev lashes for a physical maisa. Action. Ela tohor ha'ochlan tmeim hushaloke. It's only if you're pure and they are impure that you receive the penalty of lashes, because that's a real maisa, because that you're eating. Yeah, but it's not a. But you. Yeah, but it's a metaphysical. It's not. You're not doing any action on it that's perceptible. It's metaphysical. Let's say this is Tahar and this is Tameh, so I'm going like this. Yeah, I'm touching them together. But the fact that this now transfers its Tumah to this is... actually, this is the Tameh thing. That's not... it is metaphysical. You're not actually doing an action.
But the eating of it...
Of course it's an action. That's a real action.
Eating is an action, but that you're making yourself tame is also...
No, it's not that you're making yourself tame. It's that it's an independent prohibition to eating. The achila is the prohibition. The afalpi shekos of zebamiluim, even though that this is talking about again, miluim doesn't make sense, so the commentators changed the amend the text to shlomim. That this particular verse is talking about the shlomim, Hu adin l'shar korbanos kula, and it's just an example. Really, it's the same for any korban. V'afilu ha'ochel kazayis milavonas ha'mincha shenit meis achar shenis kach shebekli loka. Even the frankincense that's put on the meal offerings, which is, you might think, is not an intrinsic part of the meal offering itself. It's not the flower of the meal offering. If that became tamei after it was sanctified by putting it in the proper type of vessel, then you receive the penalty of lashes. Shigam hi chelek mechelkei korban. It's part of the korban. Ve'ein hachiyuv ela betumas av hatuma uvlad hatuma shel Torah. Obviously, this only applies to a biblical type of ritual impurity of al mipnei tuma shel divrei hametzav, a rabbinic type of impurity. Ein oloka, you don't receive lashes. Obviously, it's not daraisa. Val makin oso makas mardus, you still receive the penalty of rabbinic lashes. Yesse rube prateo, all the details, perik shloshas are mizvachim, the 13th perik hazvachim, and ohegiz, bizvan abayiz, bizvachar menekevos, males and females. If you eat on purpose olive's bulk of sacrificial meat that became impure, then you receive the penalty of lashes. Mitzvah Kuv Mem Vav, 146, very similar relevant mitzvah. Not relevant to us, relevant last mitzvah. Mitzvah Sreifas Besar Kodesh Nitma. If a type of sacrificial meat did become ritually impure, then you must burn it. We have to burn this meat that became defiled. It should not be eaten. It should be burnt in fire. The reason is that just as we wrote by Nosar, which again was closer to this in the original ordering because they're both positive commandments, the burning Nosar, so since you have to burn it to get make sure an egg is completely gone, and nobody should have any bad thoughts when it comes to the korbanos. Midini ha-mitzvah, mash'amr zichronim livracha, shim nitmu bifnim, sorfen osam bifnim. If they got ritually purified inside the Beis HaMikdash, you burn them in the Beis HaMikdash, nitmu b'chutz, sorfen osam b'chutz. If they got impurified outside, you burn it outside. Uvein sh'nitma b'avatumah u'bevladatumah, sorfen oso. If it gets, whether it's a first-degree impurity or a second-degree impurity, you still burn it. Ven osar shel kodesh, we'll learn again more what that is when we get to the actual mitzvahs that discuss how tumah is transferred. And nosar, that is a type of a korban that the owners could eat themselves, so the owners can just burn that in their houses. But bones don't get rotten, they don't have meat on them, so you don't have to burn those. Except, why should it specifically be the Pesach that you're not allowed to... That you must actually burn the leftover, or if it wasn't purified, you have to burn the bones. This is he's gonna explain in 1 second about the Pesach, but that this strengthens what we've been talking about, the reasoning behind when meat gets bad, so you don't want it to be stick around. The bones that don't rot, like I just said, don't have to be burnt. Chutz mi'atzmos ha-Pesach, why is the Pesach is different? Lefi shehein ba'azharas ve'etzem lo yishperu bo. You should not allow to break any bones of the Korban Pesach. So tishar me'am barov me'ad basar ala b'pnei emas ha-shvira. People are tittering. They're so nervous that they're going to break a bone from the Korban Pesach. They barely handle them. They pull off the meat that they can take off gently from the bone, but they don't go gnawing on the bone to make sure they get the last drop of meat because they're afraid they're going to break it. Lefigach amru aleim derech klal b'chulan sheyu tunin sreifa. So that the reason that those do have to be burnt is because there will be a little bit of meat left on and the meat will rot. And that strengthens the Sefer Echinuch's thesis about the whole burning issue, which is that you want to make sure that nobody ever goes, those carbonos don't smell so good. Ugh, disgusting. Be'ulhen an israfin. These are the things that are burnt. Besar kodesh nitma, nosar korban shenifsal, sacrificial meat that is impurified or it gets left over or become otherwise halachically invalidated. V'chein mincha shenitma so nifsalo nosar, same thing about meal offerings. V'ashem tolu shenoda levalav shelo chata kodim shenizrak daman. That remember in ashem tolui, who brings in ashem tolui? Ashem tolui is if you're not sure if you violated a prohibition that carries with it kares or not. So in Ashem Tolui, again, we said that in Ashem Tolui, since it comes based on doubt, so if you find out that you did sin or you didn't sin, then no more Ashem Tolui. You don't have to bring the Ashem Tolui anymore, and you switch either to no sin or a chatas, depending on what the case may be. So here, if the Ashem Tolui was shechted already, But remember, the thing that causes the korban to take effect is not the slaughtering, it's the sprinkling of the blood on the altar. So therefore, after the slaughtering, before the blood on the altar, so the owner of the offering found out that he, in fact, did not sin, and he did not have to bring the sashem toloi. So what happens? They can't sprinkle the blood on the altar because the korban is unnecessary. He can't just go home and eat the meat because it was slaughtered already at Mikdusha. It was already slaughtered as a sacrifice, so that you just have to burn it. There's no other choice. The chatas ha'of ha'bal ha'sofek, a chatas ha'of which comes according to, because of a sofek, the note points out that it's, let's say, right, a woman has a miscarriage and she doesn't know what type of thing, if it was an actual miscarriage or not, different halachos has to do with that, so therefore she might have to bring a chatas because it might be considered to be a birth and it might not be considered to be a birth. So, again, it wouldn't be an Hashem Toli because it's not a sin, of course, so that would be something where you bring a chatas out of doubt. So that too, this is burnt and not the normal halachos that would be associated with a chatas. Usar nazir tahor, and when you lop off the hair of a offering of a Nazirite who is pure, that is also burnt. And again, these are not sacrifices per se, but he's just adding to the list of things that you normally burn. The Orla, fruit of a tree within the first 3 years of its life has to be burnt. It's a discussion whether it literally has to be burnt. You don't have Orla burning parties there. There might be other ways to dispose of it. This is all in Israel. This is an issue where not in America, which we'll discuss later. Usually not in America, which we'll discuss later when we get to the mitzvah of Orla. The Chilei HaKerem, and when grapes and grain are sewn together, not with a thread, but rather in the field, S-O-W-N, then the products have to be burnt. The products have to be burnt. If the Dover Shein Darkly, sorry, if it can't be burnt, can go on Mashkin Shel Orla V'Chilei HaKerem. So let's say you have juice of grapes that are Orla, or any other fruit that's Orla, v'chilei ha'kerem, or grapes that grew with grain, harei elu yishafechu. They should just be burnt out into the ocean or the toilet or whatever. Poured out, yes. The ag of grora nichtov bahanikvarim, just because we're talking about things that are prohibited to derive benefit from, so we're going to discuss an even higher category, which is called something that is buried. So that you have to go totally out of sight. When something is burnt a lot of times, so you're allowed to use the ashes for whatever you want. Once you burn it, you fulfilled its mitzvah, the ashes are now allowed to derive benefit from, but there's an even more severe category of things that you're not allowed to derive benefit from, which is called nikbarim, which has to be completely buried, you can have no use from whatsoever. Ve'iluhein, kodshim shemesu, sacrificial animals that died when they were not before they got a chance to be brought as an offering. Ben kodshim izbeach, ben kodshim berek abayis, whether they were pledged actually as a korban or whether it's simply pledged to the temple treasury as a donation. The kodjim shepilu, an animal that was sanctified that miscarried. The kover hanefil, so you have to bury the mother. The mother's still alive. It's perfectly fine. But you have to bury the miscarriage. Hipila shilya tikover, also even if there's no discernible form of a fetus, and it simply miscarried the placenta. You can see it just seems to be like a placenta by itself. That should also be buried. The shura niskal, an ox that killed a person has to be stoned, so that also is buried. You can have no benefit from it whatsoever, which we learned already, that we had that mitzvah already in Parsha Mishpatim, that it says, lo ye'ochel es besaro, its meat shall not be eaten. Of course, its meat can't be, it shall not be eaten, it's not dejected, so it has to be completely buried. It's asur bahana. Thegla arufa, the calf that is killed as an atonement for a murder, then you don't know who performed the murder. But tzipori mitzora, and the birds that a person afflicted with tzaras has to bring, usar nazir tomei, and if a Nazirite becomes tomei inappropriately, and he has to cut off his hair, upeter chamor, the firstborn donkey, and basar becholov, and meat that was cooked with milk, it's also completely asar ba'ana, and has to be buried. V'chulin shenishchatu ba'azara, and let's say there's also a prohibition to slaughter regular meat in the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash. So just like you're not allowed to offer sacrifices outside the Beis HaMikdash, you're not allowed to shecht, your Shabbos chicken inside the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash. I'll explain the Maseches Pesachim. There's a discussion about different types of things that are prohibited to derive benefit from it, because Chametz is one of them. Chametz with Pesach. Is explained in Pesachim and the end of Maseches Temurah. So there's mitzvah burning sacrificial things that became impurified is applicable in times of Beis HaMikdash, both by Kohanim and by regular Jews. Ketzad, how? Hakodshim shetunim sreifa b'mikdash, sreifan mutelos al kohanim. The things that have to be burnt inside the Beis HaMikdash, like we said, that if it was nidma inside the Beis HaMikdash, has to be burnt by the Kohanim. Manisuafim b'chol ir, kigon kodshim kalim. Let's say it became impurified, the shlomim was taken, you have a shlomim, you want to go take your shlomim at home to eat, that was burnt, you wanted to eat it outside the Beis HaMikdash, and it became impurified outside the Beis HaMikdash, that can be burnt by the Jews, the regular Jews who were eating it. V'abaylim sorfim eschelkam im nidma o nosar b'vatehem. And the owners just take the parts that became impurified or became left over, and they burn it in the house. The over aleha the losara basartame o nosar shu biyado bitala seize. So if it's something that's incumbent upon you to burn and you didn't burn it, it's in your possession. Or the kohanim, if it was impurified in the temple courtyard and you've neglected to perform a positive commandment.